This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantal Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Amani Sharif, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
In the Santa Monica Mountains, Her Escape Vortex offers a unique and truly fantastic setting for your next spiritual retreat. The Lavender Garden, the fire pit overlooking the Topanga Canyon sunset, and the Moroccan-furnished yurt on this magical property provide the atmosphere for an inspiring and transformative experience. A sacred place ideal for yoga and wellness retreats, as well as cleansing and healing ceremony of all kinds, Her Escape Vortex is part of a community of people eager for personal and spiritual growth. Visit thepathtoauthenticity.com/Her Escape Vortex or click on the link in the show notes for more information. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity, episode 141, for Tuesday, September 14th, 2021, featuring a conversation with Amani Sharif. If you haven't noticed, I'm doing a room on Clubhouse Monday through Friday at noon called 20 Questions. I'm using the questionnaire that I designed for guests of the show here. And as often as possible, I'm going to try to have the guest of the particular episode in that room on the day the podcast episode is released. So today, the 14th, Amani's going to do that room with me, and I'm going to go over the questionnaire with her. That should be a lot of fun. I did it this entire last week, most of the week before. Seems to have a pretty good turnout most days. Sometimes it goes beyond the 20 questions and turns into a discussion with the topic. Still kind of getting a feel for it, but this is something I've been wanting to do for a while, to do some sort of episode for this every day to tie in with the podcast. So I'm excited about that. Have a couple events on the horizon here. Have an 8-week series of groups called Path to Purpose. It'll meet on Saturday afternoons beginning October 16th. I want to put together a group of 8 people, and I have several showing interest already. So if you feel like you want to do a little bit of a deep dive, who am I? What do I want? What's my life mission? And have some support around that. Path to Purpose. There's a link in the show notes. Also doing a retreat at the beginning of January. the theme of reconnection for people in recovery. Excited about that too. And again, you can learn more about that through the link in the show notes. But I'm really happy to share this episode with Imani. I met her in a room on Clubhouse called Man Enough, which meets on Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. Always a compelling conversation. Lots of folks from the UK, others like me from the East Coast of the United States, and even some people out on the West Coast who are getting up bright and early to take part in this conversation every week. So it's definitely worthwhile and something to check out, particularly if you're interested in men's issues. So Imani has always stood out to me as just a powerful person, and just have always kind of had in the back of my mind that I wanted to get her on the podcast, and just asked her a couple weeks ago, and she was very gracious. We had a fantastic conversation. She was very giving of herself. Very interesting woman. Not enough superlatives to describe her adequately. So, there you go. Hope you enjoy it. Imani Sharif. In this room, Man Enough, on Sundays, which to me is really interesting because it brings a really nice sort of array of people, both men and women from different cultures. And we talk about all these different topics related to manhood and men and women in relationships. And often the subject of the room is relatively controversial. And I think people come into it with a lot of enthusiasm and sometimes maybe a little bit of a chip on their shoulders. But, you know, it always ends up being a really deep conversation with lots of powerful contributions, right?
Yeah.
So you have stood out to me from the very beginning because you just have a spine in a way that stands out to me. And it's apparent to me that you've done a lot of work on yourself. You're a powerful woman. And I feel like as someone who works with men and wants to help men be better, when I see powerful women and the way that men respond to them, to me, it usually ends up coming out one of three ways. Either they can't handle it and they back away, like out of a place of passivity, or it brings up their insecurities and it comes out in the form of anger or resentment or something of the kind, or it inspires them to be better men. And that's what I get from you. When I see you, when I hear what you say, when I see you challenged in that room sometimes, and the way that you stand your ground with some pretty powerful personalities, it makes my heart sing, and it makes me want to be a better man. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I'm excited to hear your story and just to have you invest the time in this. Thank you.
You're welcome, Tom. That's such a beautiful thing for you to actually say to me. No one has ever articulated it this way. So thank you so much for this.
Does that connect for you?
It definitely does connect, and it is a big part of my story, yes, especially with men, yes.
Okay. So let's talk about your story. Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
So I was born in Tripoli, Libya. I grew up there. I went to university there. I graduated from law school. And I grew up in a family. So the whole culture is very traditional. We have a very traditional culture in Libya. But I grew up in a family where we were encouraged to think outside the box. We were encouraged to ask questions. We were encouraged to talk about stuff that culturally we weren't allowed to talk about outside of our house, like stuff about religion or stuff about politics or stuff about cultural stuff. So basically all of these things, we were very encouraged, and we used to have like these long discussion with my dad and my granddad about a religion and about politics and about all of these different things. So I grew up knowing that I can ask questions, that I could say, that I could speak my mind, that my point of view is valid, it's listened to. But going out to the culture, going outside of my family, going to university, going to school, it was a different story. It was, you're a woman, you can't say this, this is a red line, you can't speak about this. And people looked at me differently. I challenged them. I challenged the way that they've been raised. I challenged the way that they've been taught. And they fought against it a lot. So growing up in that culture, I had to adapt my strong suit, my way of being, my fighting instinct, if you can call it that. So growing up in that culture, I had to like say what I needed to say and stand my ground and not back up. And also studying in law school and studying law was a game changer for me and my personality, because I was dealing a lot with men. And in my culture, women are looked at differently. Women are looked at that they are very weak creatures, that they shouldn't be speaking over a man, that a man is, you know, this amazing creature that you should always respect and should always have the last word. And I always fought against that. So for a very long time, I was fighting against men. And I got to a point where I hated men because I didn't feel respected. I didn't feel like my point of view mattered. I didn't feel like my voice was heard. So I was like, no, this is not right. And the whole fight between men and women was really big for me. And that, of course, affected my personality, affected my relationship with men, big time affected my relationship with men. And I didn't understand men. I didn't understand why would a man have this thing of like, I am better than you. I am worth more than you. So me not understanding that was like a big trigger for me. So I started from a very angry place, and I could say that I had to work a long time on myself to find compassion and to find understanding for men and to really learn to appreciate men and to see them as, you know, like they're with us, they are our partners, they're not our enemies, we shouldn't fight against them, they should be with us. And it took me a very long time to get to that place. But yeah, this is where I started.
So what was it that got you there?
Failed relationships, a lot and a lot of failed relationships. And after a while, when you start your self-development, I started my self-development journey, I started to, instead of blaming others, I started to really look at myself and look at my behavior and look at the way that I'm thinking. And once I started to do that, I found out that I was coming from a very angry place. I was coming from a place of like, I'm right, you're wrong, you should listen to me. I know better than you. You are not more important than me. I am more important than you. And instead of taking it to a place of partnership, I took it to a boxing range, basically. So this is where I started to really listen, and I started to change, and I started to transform.
And then what?
And then it's been a very transformative, I would say, because after looking at this for myself, I got to grow as a human being. I got to understand myself more. I got to be able to make an impact, because when I was coming from anger, even though I was saying valid points, no one was listening to me because I was coming from anger, because people would just like react to you. But when I started to really work on myself and transform myself, I started to come from compassion. So even if I say something, people are more likely to listen to me. So I start to make an impact. I start to make a difference to other people. In terms of relationships, I used to really think that there were no good men out there. Now, really, I used to believe that. And since I gave that belief up, the men that I used to think, this is a funny thing that happened, right? The men that I used to think are bad men transformed inside of me, transforming my belief, and they became better men. I'd be shocked sometimes to really see how people, how if you change your point of view of someone and give them this space to really show you who they are, how much they could actually change for you as a person. So for me, I really started to see a lot of really great, good men out there, but I'm still struggling with understanding men. And this is where the Sunday morning room came along, Tom. So me and Trey and Inas will always hang around and talk about relationships, talk about men and women. And Trey will always give a perspective from a man's side. And inside of these discussions about men and women and relationships, we thought like, okay, we need to start a room just so men can actually share authentically what's going on for them. But for me, the reason why I started the room was because I really wanted to understand men. I really thought that, okay, I worked on myself, I've done all this healing, I'm a transformed person right now, but I still don't understand men. I still don't get how they think. And the room started from a place of, I'm going to take every Sunday, every week, from my whole weekend, and just really give it to men so I can understand them. So, and it's been doing really, really great. It's been doing wonders for me.
So if there's one thing that stands out that you've learned from this, what is it?
That men and women are completely different. Completely different. And we are fighting to find a way to communicate to each other and live together in peace. That's the biggest take.
What you were talking about, your change in perspective, is really interesting. It brings to mind a couple different things. The first one is that, you know, whatever we focus on magnifies.
Yes.
So when you're seeing the good in a human being, you see more of it.
Yes.
But also, when you're angry, and that's the energy that is emitting from you, people instinctively pick up on that. But when you're coming from a place of love and compassion, they respond in an entirely different way.
Yes.
So that's part of what's going on. So do you feel understood as a human being?
Do I feel understood as a human being?
specifically as it pertains to these matters?
And you mean, do I feel understood in relationships?
As a woman with men, your perspective, because I've gotten the sense from you, just in some of the messaging that we've had back and forth,
yeah,
that you have a lot of love to give. And I wonder if you're afraid that people don't see that.
I think that, so how I come across to people is that I'm very, what's a word that I could use? I'm very feisty. I've been called that a million times. How I come across to people is that I'm very fiery, basically. And I think what I could say about that is that it really comes from my culture and from my language, because English is my second language. So I grew up speaking Arabic, and Arabic is completely different than English. So when I'm in my brain translating stuff from Arabic to English, it comes across very blunt, because our language is very blunt. It's very straight. For example, we don't say please and thank you. It's not something that we use in our language, in our everyday language. So for me, I think people mistake me just coming from a different culture and speaking different language and all of those, and just think that I'm just being fiery, or I'm just being loud, or I am just being righteous. And sometimes I am, don't get me wrong. Like, sometimes I can be very righteous, but it all comes down from a place of love. But sometimes it's harder for me to bring it across to people because of the culture and the language barrier. It just doesn't translate that way, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You do feel somewhat misunderstood then?
Yes, I do. Definitely, I do.
Well, I'll tell you that I've never thought, man, she's really angry. Or she's way too feisty. Or, I mean, if you're really perceptive about how people talk and you're really, really listening, I mean, you can tell. You can tell when someone's coming from an angry or a resentful place or an apologetic place or whatever. Just like you can tell with some of those people in that room. I mean, there are people in there who have chips on their shoulders in certain ways.
Yeah.
Or interesting perspectives, or you can tell from what they share that their orientation and their life experience has injured them in certain ways and has made it very difficult for them to trust, and very cynical in some ways about relationships, about the opposite sex.
Yes.
But personally, like, I've never gotten any of that from you.
Well, that's great.
All I've gotten is that you might not feel as understood as you would like to.
Yes.
All right. So you're an attorney.
I'm a law graduate.
And so what are you doing?
So this is like a really long story. So when I came here to the UK, I came here after I finished my law school back home in Libya. So I came here in 2015, not that long ago. And I was looking for like what would be my next step, because I knew that I didn't want to do law. I knew that I loved studying law, but it wasn't something that I wanted to work on. I'm more of like a people person, and me sticking on a desk doing paperwork is not something that I would love to do. And I don't know if it's the same thing in America or not, but here in the UK, you have a barrister who goes to court, and then you have a solicitor that does all the paperwork, basically. So for me to become a barrister and do what I really love, I needed to study more. I need to study from the beginning. And I wasn't prepared to do that for 5 years. So I was looking for what is my passion? What do I love? Okay, so now I escaped a war-torn country. I'm trying to build a life here in the UK. I'm trying to start from zero. What is it that I'm really passionate about? And this is where I started to actually discover myself and do a lot of self-development. And that made a massive difference to me. So I started in sales. So I was like, okay, so let me just find a job. The first thing I need to do is just find a job, any job, whatever it is, just let me do something. So I started in sales, and then I started working with niche beauty brands, and I started growing and scaling their businesses in shop floors. And so once I started to be very, very, very successful in sales, I actually fell in love with sales. I was like, oh, I can convince people to buy something and I'll get a lot of money. That's easy. So I was like, okay, so what is my next step? I did the beauty consultancy for 3 years. And after that, I was like, okay, I need a new challenge, because there wasn't anything that it wasn't helping me grow. It was the same thing over and over again, just taking brands, growing them, and then letting them go and taking new brands. So I was like, okay, I love working in real estate. I've never worked in real estate day of my life that time, but I was like, I love pretty houses. I really love pretty houses, and I'm good at sales. So let me do real estate. It kind of made sense in my brain, but it didn't make sense outside of my brain. So I started applying to real estate agencies, and I got no, and no, and no, and no. And I think I applied for 100 until I got to basically go to an interview. And I knew that if I went to an interview, and this is something that I got from self-development, I knew if I went to an interview, I will get a job. So all I was doing is hoping and praying that I will get an interview. That's all I wanted. And I went to an interview, and of course I got the job. And I started in real estate, and I didn't know anything about real estate. It was so crazy. The reason why I wanted to do real estate is because my family has a portfolio of properties here in the UK, and I wanted to manage them. And I spoke to my dad, and I was like, Dad, I want to manage our properties. And he was like, hell no, you're not getting any close to our properties. And I was like, why not? He's like, you know nothing about the industry. Like, what do you mean I'm going to let you manage the properties? I'm like, okay. So I wanted to learn from an estate agency to manage my dad's portfolio. That's all I wanted back then. So as I started learning about the industry, I knew that it was way more than what I thought it was, way more than pretty houses and just showing them around and selling them to people. So I really fell in love with the industry, and I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. So I worked at a real estate agency for a year, and then actually a year and a half, I think. Yeah, a year and a half, and then COVID hit and I was made redundant. And then after COVID, after the lockdown faded away in summer 2020, a colleague of mine who worked with me in our estate agency called me up, and I was just checking up on him, seeing how he's doing. And he told me, I'm going to start my own estate agency, and I would love for you to be a partner in it. And I was like, hell yes, I'm going to be a partner in it. So this is how I came to become a partner at the estate agency, and we're doing really, really well. I'm really proud of everyone on the team and how they're working. We're doing amazingly. So this is basically my main bread and butter, as they say here in the UK. And then I started my own beauty brand in the lockdown. And this is something also I've been very, very passionate about for a very long time, since I was working with beauty brands and the beauty industry. And it was something that me and my best friend will always talk about, but we could never really found the right time to create it, because I would always be busy doing something or working full time or doing something. So when the lockdown hit and I was made redundant, it was like kind of a now or never kind of thing. It was like, okay, so we're just sitting at home doing nothing. How about we start planning our beauty brand? And she looked at me and she was like, "You're crazy. No one's buying beauty products right now. It's a lockdown. We can open a mask company that will bring us money." And I was like, "No, let's just really do this. Let's really think about it and really do it. This is not for now. This is long term. We've always been thinking about it for years now, and we haven't really done anything about it." So we actually started the business plan on a tissue in the park after a run in the lockdown. And it was, and it's doing really great, and it's doing amazing. And I'm really proud of the progress. I mean, with all beauty brands that you have, with a very, very, very hard industry, we're doing really well.
It's really interesting to me. You know, you did the questionnaire, and, you know, I always ask people, what is the one thing that you've consistently struggled with over the course of your life? And of course, for you, it was relationships with men.
Yeah.
Yet, in this business setting, you get on the phone with this guy who is very direct and clear about, "I want you to be my partner." And you're like, "Yes."
Yeah.
And it's easy and it works.
Yeah.
So what's the difference to you? What's the difference?
I really don't know, Tom. It's such a great question that you asked me this, because in real estate, it's a man's job. Like, you don't have a lot of women working in real estate here. And so I get along with men very, very, very well. Like, they respect me. I have a seat at the table all the time, even though that I am the youngest partner in that firm. And my points are valid and listened to, and my voice is heard. And it's been like this for all my life. So basically, in university, and this is something I found very, very funny, when I choose my subject, I will always choose a male professor, not a female professor, because I have this belief that with a male professor, I will always pass. Because one time I didn't have a male professor and I failed a semester, I failed a subject because of that. So I will make sure that I always have a male professor. My male friends love me. They absolutely love me. And I don't understand why does it, when it comes to relationships, everything changes. I'm not in the source of it yet. I haven't discovered it for myself yet, because I talk to men. I'm really good with men. Men trust me a lot and they respect me a lot. But when it diverts to a relationship, everything changes.
Let's go back to this. The woman you didn't pass, it was a woman. Yeah. What was that about? Because to me, the thought that you would even consider whether it's a male or female professor, because you're smart. Why does it, you're going to pass either way. Why? So what was it about the woman? Was she intimidated by you?
Here in the UK, it doesn't happen. But back home in my culture, women find it difficult to be with women who don't represent their culture or don't represent their values or how they've been raised. It's very difficult for them to be around someone different, basically. So with men, I really don't know. I always felt like men appreciated me. And they appreciated my intelligence. They appreciated how I speak. And I think, I don't know, I'm not sure about this, but I think it comes from my really masculine energy, because I'm a little bit going into trying to understand my feminine energy. But when I was back home, I was very into my masculine energy. And I think, I'm not sure about this, but I think they feel safe about me because I make them feel like I'm one of the guys, like I'm not a girl. I'm just one of the guys. And they were like, "Oh, okay, it's fine. She's cool. She's one of the guys. She understands us," even though I don't understand them at all. But I make them feel like they understood. So I'm not sure what it is, to be honest, but this is my perspective. And it's probably just a belief that I had, and it had nothing to do with reality. And I just made up a story about it, and I lived inside my story as it's the truth, that if I don't go with a male professor, I will fail. Probably it was a story that I made up, but this is how it was. I've always been really good with men.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's funny. You remind me of what I saw as a compliment that I paid to. I've only said this to one other woman in my life, and she took it as a compliment. And I can say the same to you, that you're more of a man than a lot of men I know. I mean, you do have strong masculine energy. So, you know, just the nature of romantic relationships, they are where we are closest to the heart. It's the deepest and most vulnerable we get with anyone. So, like, going back to what I said about you in the beginning and about powerful women in general, you know, men, I think, respond to them in three different ways. Either they wimp out and don't go near her, or they get angry and, you know, tell themselves they don't like her, or she's a bitch, or I hate her, or whatever it is, or they feel called to be better, and she brings his power out, you know, it welcomes the power out, which that guy's harder to find. Because he has to have done his own work. But Amani, this is really like a pretty comfortable thing for me. Like, I've done a lot of these now. But with you, I'm like, I better, you know, I need to be ready. like I got to have my shit together for this, you know? I mean, and I think that that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
The expression of you better come correct to Amani. That's what comes to mind for me. Like, you better have your shit together if you're going to come to this woman and try to really, really connect with her, because she's nothing to be trifled with. And I think a lot of guys just don't want to mess with that. It scares them.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, to be honest, it is scary. It is scary to be around someone that, like, if you think about it, right? The most amazing people in our lives, the people that really made a difference to us, were not the people that let us get away with shit.
Right.
They're the people that really stood their ground and told us, like, you're full of crap. Like, shape up.
Right, right.
And this, we might not like it, like, it might really be something that we really truly hate, but it's the love-hate relationship that we have with it that makes us grow. And I think that's what happens in most of my relationships. Like, all of my exes, I am very, very, very good friends with them. And the reason why I'm very good friends with them is because I make sure that the relationship doesn't end in a way that there is resentment or there's any type of hate. And they also know that I challenge them for them to be better people. I challenge them for them to grow as human beings. And I really truly believe that I help them heal. I really do believe that I really help them heal. And sometimes you can't be with that. Sometimes you're not ready for that in your life, but you will always appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that you understand that about yourself, because that's such a gift, right? To be that force in someone's life that you're a catalyst for healing. And that's one of the things about when, as human beings, when we're triggered, that's like a tell for where we need to do our work, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Speaking of being someone who helps people heal, One of the things I heard you say recently, which I related to, is that people open up to you.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I always felt like since a very young age, I always felt like I have this kind of, I didn't understand it at first, but I kind of used to call it a gift where people will just literally tell me their deepest, darkest secrets. They would feel at peace with me. They will feel like they can talk to me about stuff that maybe they are not able to talk to about anyone else in the world, basically. And I think after understanding myself, this happens because even though I was very righteous, and I still am righteous, but I really come from no judgment. I come from literally no judgment. I really believe that everyone deserves to live the life that they want and live a happy life and be the person that makes them happy. So when I listen to people, I don't listen from, you're wrong and I'm here to fix you. I listen to people from a place of compassion. I listen to people to understand them. I'm always like really curious about how people think. So I listen from that place. And when you're listening to people from that place, when you give them this space with no judgment, you would be shocked of how much people are willing to share with you.
No, I'm not. Actually, I'm not. No, it's critical. And it doesn't surprise me when you talked about where you come from in terms of your immediate family and how you were taught to think outside the box and question cultural norms and all that stuff. Of course, there's an absence of judgment that comes from that. So I can see where that would sort of cultivate that in your personality. That's a gift, you know? I mean, one of the things that I love about my parents, you know, there were a lot of things that they could have done better.
Yes.
But they taught me to think for myself.
Yes.
And they taught me also to stand up for what was right and not to be daunted by the resistance that comes from that. Just do it anyway.
Yes.
And I imagine you, your parents probably gave you the same sorts of messages, right?
Yeah, as you said, parents, of course, every single parent could have done, would have done a better job. And I think we can always share about all the mistakes that our parents made. But for me, I think the best thing ever that my parents ever taught me is to think outside the box, to stand up for what I really truly believe. And the last thing is for me not to care about what people think of me. And that was like one of the biggest, biggest lesson that my parents taught me. Like it really helped me throughout my life because I lived all my life in a very judging culture. They judge you over everything. And I stood my ground. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. But I don't care. I really don't care.
That's something I really admire in other human beings because that I didn't get from my family. And it's a big part of why I went astray because I was so invested in having their favor and not being rejected or not being abandoned. And it was really about a deficiency of self-esteem that I couldn't be that. So I've always seen it in other people and really admired it. And I guess on some level wished I was more like that. And I guess the good news is that I have become a lot more like that than I ever was. So that's good.
Amazing.
I want to ask you about the personal development work you've done. Tell me about that.
So the personal development work, I actually stumbled in by chance. In 2015, I just came to London. I was figuring myself. My dad bought me a ticket to Tony Robbins and was like, you're going. And at that time, I didn't know who Tony Robbins was. I didn't know anything about self-development. I didn't know anything about coaching. I thought I was the queen of the world. No one ever knew everything about everything. And who is this person that you want me to see? So I went kicking and screaming, to be honest. I went because he like literally told me, you have to go. I was like, I don't want to go. He was like, I paid £700 for this ticket. You're going. So I was like, okay. So I go to Tony Robbins, and I remember sitting in my chair waiting for him to come out. I was so upset. Like, I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here? All these happy people, like, what are they happy about at 8 a.m? It's so annoying. And then Tony comes up and he starts speaking. And within half an hour of him talking, I remember saying, like, this is what I want. Like, this is what I want to become when I grow up. And it was life changing for me. Like, that weekend was the best weekend of my whole entire life. I learned so much out of it. And then I started doing more courses. I did another course with Tony Robbins. I did Landmark Education here in London. I stayed with them. I did lots of courses with them. I did EverCoach. I'd done so many. I got a little bit addicted to it. So I've done so many courses and so many self-development things. I've done I have 2 diplomas, one in small business coaching and one in personal coaching. So I stayed in the work for a very, very, very long time. I'm still doing courses here and there every time I find a chance. I love it. I personally love it.
That's great. I mean, I don't know. I feel like one of the gifts that I've had as a human being is that I'm curious about myself.
Mm.
I want to learn about myself and understand myself better. And it served me very, very well. A lot of people don't have that.
Mm.
And especially like working in a world where people most definitely need to change.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a lot harder if you're not willing to go inward.
Yeah.
And evaluate your motives, evaluate your beliefs, all that kind of stuff. It's huge.
Yeah. The biggest thing that I discovered while doing all these self-developments about myself is that I was living in a blind spot world where I thought I was taking decisions from my own will, but my decisions were all coming from my fears, my past experiences, who I thought I was, who I believed I was, and what I believed I was worthy of. And it wasn't coming from free will. So this is like the biggest lesson that I could have ever learned while looking into self-development and really working on myself.
Yeah, there's a Carl Jung quote, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate.
Yes, that's so true. So true.
Okay, so what's the big, big belief that you have been able to counteract that stands out to you from all this work that you've done?
I wouldn't say there's like one big, big belief, but there's always beliefs about every single aspect of my life that I had. Like about, let's say about work. I had this belief that I could never compete in a city like London because I'm not a graduate from a university here. I sound like I speak good English, but my English is very bad. And there are so many people better than me for the job. It's such a competitive city that I will never be able to compete in it. And that was a belief that I had. Like when I came and started looking for work, I was like, how am I ever going to find work in the city? And then what I really found out is that I have so many different things that could be like a superpower. Yes, I don't speak good English, but I'm a good salesperson. I can convince people to do stuff. Yes, I didn't graduate from law school, from school here in the UK, or I didn't graduate from university, but who cares? where I graduated from, because here they don't really care about where you graduated from, as long as you have experience, as long as they like you as a person, as long as they think that you're fit for the job. So for me to be able to apply to 100 real estate agencies and get for one interview, like all I wanted was one interview, is a big thing that I had to shift a lot of beliefs for, because after rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection, a lot of people will be like, yeah, I can't do this. This is not possible. And I've seen people quit after just applying to two or three jobs. They're like, no, I can't do this anymore. I'm like, no, that's not going to stop me. I'm going to get that interview. And when I get that interview, I promise you, I'll get the job.
If you remind me, I have a friend. He was one of the first people I had on the podcast. His name's Spencer Reese, and he's a poet. And I met him maybe 6 or 8 years before he published his first book. And he spent 10 years trying to get a book published. And just got rejection after rejection after rejection. And the first time I went to his house, I was amazed because, you know, when you go through that, most publishers don't bother to write, or if they do, it's a form letter, you know, just boilerplate. But the ones where people took time to give him feedback, he framed them and they were hanging all over his apartment, you know?
Yeah.
And he just kept writing and he kept submitting, and it took 10 years, but it got published. And then he got a Guggenheim Fellowship, which I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a huge artistic accomplishment in the United States. And then he got a Fulbright scholarship, which is like, you know, both of these pay you to go do what you do. Just here's money, go live, produce more art. And it's, you know, really the pinnacle of artistic life in the United States, but he didn't quit.
Yeah.
And he faced such rejection that it amazes me. And when you talk about sales, like if it's something I really, really care about, I can probably sell as well as you can, but if it's not,
yeah,
man, I don't even want to bother.
Yeah.
And there's no way I can make a living at it. But it's such an incredible thing that you, not only that you are willing to go through all that rejection, but also just have the conviction that all I got to do is get an interview. And it feels really good to feel that way. I mean, I've gotten to the place in life where it's not a foregone conclusion to me that if I get the interview, I get the job. But what is a foregone conclusion is that if it's the right job and I get the interview, I'll get the job, and I'll know in the interview whether it's the right job or not. And I don't get nervous. You know, I just go be myself and it'll work out the way that it's supposed to. And if they don't accept me, then, you know, that's okay. I don't need everyone to like me or everyone to think that I'm capable.
Yeah.
And that's, it's a tough place to get when, you know, you have trouble with self-esteem and all that. It's taken a lot of work for me to get there, but I love being there.
Yeah. It's a great place to be. I remember, because I feel like not all days are like great days and you're ready to go and everything's great and you're so motivated. No, people need to understand that even the best people in the world have their low moments and high moments. And I think because of all this social media and where we are right now, people think that people are just happy. They don't have low moments. They don't have sad moments. They don't have moments where they feel like they've lost so much. They're just happy. And that's not the truth. The truth, as a human being, you're going to have your low moments and you're going to have your happy moments. And I remember one in my very, very low moments. I was in a classroom. I was doing a course. And I was in a very, very low state. And it was fate that the conversation would be about failure. Because if you're up to something in life, you're going to fail. I failed so many times. I'm sitting here and talking, oh, I've done this and I've done that, but I've failed so many times and I'm still failing until this day. Even though that I've achieved some stuff, I'm still failing. And I think the thing that really shifted the idea of failure is what one of my coaches said. And I was sitting in a classroom, I was feeling really down, and the conversation was about failure. And she said, there is nothing called failure. And I looked up and I was like, what is she talking about? She was like, failure is made in language. Human beings made failure. There is nothing called failure. If you really truly think about it, failure is you saying that you want to go from A to D and you achieving C. And you sit around, look at yourself, feel sorry for yourself, and then say, oh my God, I failed. I can't do this again. But the reality is you just got to C. You can look at it and see, okay, how am I going to get to point D now? What do I need to do for me to get from C to D? Because you're already halfway through, right? But people don't look at it that way. People look at it as I failed. I am a failure. And they create it in language. Other animals don't have failure in their dictionary. If you look at the lion who's trying to feed his baby lion children, running after a gazelle and not catching it doesn't really crumble into a ball and say, oh my God, I failed, my children are gonna die. No, he goes and runs after another one and another one and another one until he gets the gazelle and feed his children. But we love to just give ourselves names. I am a failure. I am this. I am that. To stop us from achieving our true potentials. So when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, this is gold. This is the best thing I've ever heard my whole entire life. And I stopped looking at it as failure. I literally stopped saying that I failed in life. Hmm.
Yeah, well, I going back to the idea of you struggling with relationships, I hope that you see that the one that really counts, the relationship with yourself, man, you got it. Like, you got it down. And the rest is just whether they fit, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I see. And that's what I believe. And I hope that that absence of judgment that you have with other people, that you can give yourself a little bit of that too, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think you're incredible. So one thing I want to ask you about, I've seen you posted on Instagram a couple times.
Yeah.
This idea that you don't know how to flirt. Like, what the hell are you talking about? What is that about?
Oh my God. Okay. So this is another story. So I actually used to think that I was a good flirt until my friends were like, what the hell is this?
Well, you know, I think about that. I mean, what do you mean? Why does she have to flirt? Don't say anything. Just like, just be you.
Just be you. Yeah. No, this whole idea of flirting came from a friend of mine who's really, really great with men. Like, she's really got it nailed down with men. She understands men very, very well. And sometimes it's hard for people to actually believe this, but I am a very, very shy person. Like, in person, I'm very, very shy. And I remember when we used to go, like me and my friend would go out to a place and then I would see a guy I like and I'll be like, oh my God, I can't even look at him now. And my face turns red. I get so embarrassed and I get super, super shy. And she's like, you are the worst flirt ever. Like, you really don't know how to flirt. And this is where this whole idea of me being a bad flirt came from. I don't know how to, I can speak to men in certain situations, but when it comes to romantic situations, I'm like very shy and awkward.
Well, if you need practice, you know, I'm happy to be here for you. You know, it's funny. You mentioned, you asked me when we're scheduling this, if we're going to do Zoom. And the first thing that went through my head is Zoom. I have enough of a problem stringing together complete sentences in the first place. How am I going to make any sense if I have to look at you and try to talk to you at the same time? So, well, this has been incredible. I really appreciate the opportunity to get to know you. So, last question.
Yes.
If you could go back to the younger Amani and give her a word of advice or encouragement, what time in your life would that have been? When would she have needed it most? And what would you say to her?
My teenage years. And I would say, like, just go have fun and stop being so hard on yourself. Like, just go enjoy life. Everything will work out. All of the things that you plan for are not going to go the same way. So stop planning, go enjoy your life, and stop being so hard on yourself. Because even though I don't judge other people, I judge myself a lot. This is something I had to learn the hard way. So, yeah.
Well, listen, we talked about maybe you don't feel as understood as you could, but just so you know, I get it. I see it like clear as day. So thank you so much for doing this. And you got to come back sometime.
Yes.
And I look forward to seeing you on Sundays.
Yes. Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Authenticity proudly supports the iSpeak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit iSpeakMedia.org. All right, there you go. That's Amani. Great woman. So, please leave a rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, whether it lets you like, rate, review, follow, whatever it is, wherever you listen, please do it. Every little bit helps. The complete and unedited interview with Amani is available on Patreon, as well as early access to this and every episode for as little as a dollar a month. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. I want to thank the show's sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery, Her Escape Vortex. As always, I want to thank Wendy Chin with Equivox. Thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose songs you hear throughout the show. Their music is used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Visit thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you know someone who'd enjoy an episode, please share it with them, forward it. Every little bit helps. man, just talking to someone like this, meeting people like this, makes me feel like I'm doing something right with my life. So thanks again to Imani. Thank you all for investing the time in this podcast and supporting me. Hope you have a great week, and I hope you keep coming back. Be nice.
Player.
This episode was brought to you by Equivox. For digital marketing or web design services, visit Equivox.com.